Oh my god.
Hello.
What?
Hello.
There's a few more voices in my head than I'm used to.
As in more than zero?
Usually it's the sound of a dial tone.
Really? The voices in my head sound like a modem.
Damn it.
Podcasts, The Final Frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
Superhero Time presents That One Episode of Star Trek with Chris.
That's good, too. I need more Fort Max.
Hey, Mickey. Scott.
They're like hacking firewalls and they're stealing our megabits.
And Fort Max.
I've let him touch my books.
This week on those two episodes of Star Trek, it's the animated series.
Woo!
Cartoons. I
mean... or that one episode of Star Trek and this one, old fanfic where Star Trek characters do something from some other thing.
Yeah, where Larry Niven comes in and goes, fuck you, Star Trek, you're not part of my universe. Because that's exactly what happened.
But we'll get to that eventually.
We'll get to that eventually, yeah.
So let's start with the hamburger element.
Mm.
Oh, good. I was afraid I would be the one that would have to make that joke.
I don't think you really had to make that joke.
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay, that's true. Oh, yes, I seen your contract. Yes, that is exactly what has to happen.
Yes.
I don't get it.
Right next to an anus full of brown M&Ms.
Mm. Imagine that the lovely tinkling sound like rain on a tin roof when you poof them out into a porcelain toilet.
Would the toilet be, like, you know, empty, no water? Because otherwise they'd really make the tinkling sound.
Yeah, no. It'd be empty. What? You keep water in your toilet? What's wrong with you?
Or better yet, like one of the little coin spiral things they have at the mall.
Ah, yeah.
Just drop it out and just unload.
They spiral like a mousetrap.
You know, if you just point it upward, it just kind of becomes a fountain of brown M&Ms.
But then they clatter everywhere.
Yeah. Because then you gotta try to, if they arc up high enough, then you kind of lean forward and try to catch them with your mouth.
Never go ass to mouth,
Scott. If you start doing like somersaults, then like they can come out and catch them as you're spinning. And they travel through and back out the other end, and it's like an endless loop.
It amazes me how much more vulgar we get once we know the thing is recording. Because before we record, we're like, yes, here's an in-depth intellectual discussion about Star Trek episodes and their ramifications on larger society. As soon as the recorder comes
press
on,
record and poop,
ass M&Ms, ass candy.
Well, now that we've had our fill of ass candy, Mickey.
All right, so Kirk and the crew are investigating Planet Argo, which is. Planet Water.
It's Water World.
And they take... Yes. They take the Aqua Shuttle down there to investigate. There's some kind of bullshit reason they give. They need to because they dropped their keys, I guess.
No, there's another planet that's having the same issues, so they can figure out how to fix this planet. They can apply that to the other Federation planet. So this planet isn't
right,
Federation,
right.
But they're going to use it to figure out how to save a Federation planet because fuck this planet.
But Scott, there's no intelligent life on this planet. What's the big deal?
Right, exactly. Except for all the
men. And plus, I mean, the thing that fucked this planet, the thing that is happening to the other planet happened ages ago to this planet. So,
right.
Yeah, these people are all dead.
Yeah, so nobody cares.
So we're just gonna go fuck up their graves and figure out what to do.
Yes.
So as they land their boat shuttle on the lake for pontooning, because those aren't nacelles, those are pontoons.
Yeah.
They and their awkward ensign named red shirt guy.
Oh, but he's got the visibly most distraught smile.
That he's on an away mission. No, that's the smile of like, oh god, I'm going to die. I'm on an away mission with Kirk. Yeah. Anyway, so a giant prawn attacks their boat, smacks them around a bit.
And everybody seems to forget that thing can fly.
Oh, this episode is so weird.
Yeah, like, so you know, once that thing came back the second time, they totally could have just, like, lifted off out of the water and flown away.
So, so they shoot with phasers, they stun it, it closes its eyes peacefully and sinks back under the water, and they go, well, that's done. And then they go underwater with it. Because why not go underwater right the fuck here?
We're going to follow it.
Yeah. What the hell? This whole episode is full of terrible decisions. Terrible.
Welcome to Star Trek.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to podcasting about Star Trek. It's full of terrible decisions. Like podcasting about Star Trek.
Rape gangs. Okay, so chasing after the big monster was a bad idea. It breaks the shuttle, tosses out McCoy and Clayton.
Who?
Clayton. Redshirt. Then it grabs the shuttle with Kirk and Spock's body still in it and just sort of slinks away. Bye.
Sardines.
So, pan up to the Enterprise. It's 5 days later, and they still haven't found the shuttle or the bodies of Kirk and Spock.
And I am surprised that Scotty hasn't bombarded the planet with the phasers.
This episode goes very, very quickly. So if it sounds like we're rushing, it's because we are. One of the scenes before they go back up to the ship, there's an interior shot of McCoy and Kirk, and suddenly there's space in the background. Do you guys notice that?
I missed that.
It's like it like 2024. There's like, oh my god, then there's just space in the background for some reason. And then they're back on the planet, and then the animal destroys the ship, and oh my god. Weird.
Well, I'm going to blame Funimation.
They probably didn't have the time to reshoot those drawings on the new background.
Oh my god, it's insane.
So, 5 days later, they find the bodies of Kirk and Spock. Beached, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
Face down in the water.
Yeah, face down in the water, as Fort Max said.
Maybe they're still alive.
McCoy, that is one optimistic motherfucker.
He can cure a rainy day, you know.
Yeah. Well, what is a rainy day but a puddle of water on the ground?
I think you mean but a puddle of water in the air, Scott.
I know what I said.
Also, I like how they apparently just have fan boats on the Enterprise that they can, you know, drop down on the planet.
Sure.
It's right next to the four-wheelers.
With the machine guns on back.
Machine phasers, thank you.
Ah, you're right, I'm sorry. Pulse phasers, yes.
I want a Gatling phaser.
Oh, I do too.
They have them in the game.
They do, these giant underslung cannons. It's awesome.
That doesn't even make any sense.
Sure does. You have like rotating phaser crystals.
They shoot a lot of lasers out. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
Star Trek is the worst.
Actually, what it is, it's just like the old Type 1, you know, pocket rabbit phaser things, little vibrator ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bunch of them strung on a belt, and they just fed through it, and they fire one and throw it away.
But it's at maximum, like, level 16, though, so it burns up the lanthanide cell, and then you just move on to the next one. That's what they did with all the old ones when they upgraded to Type 2. So we have all these Type 1s around. What do we do with them? And some engineer's like, I've got an idea.
Put them all in a belt.
Yeah. It has like a big crank, like an old like Wild West Gatling gun.
It's like some mechanic lever that reaches down and pushes the button in each time.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
So they find the bodies, McCoy inspects them, and they're alive, but they can't breathe for some reason. That's weird. And why are their hands all webbed?
Inbreeding.
Yeah, I was about to say they're as inbred as Tennesseans now.
I can laugh at that because I don't come from Tennessee originally.
Yep, neither do I.
All right, so they have Scotty build a tank full of water on the ship. And they beam up Kirk and Spock in a whole bunch of water, and McCoy goes and talks about how they got nictitating membranes out of their eyes now. Gross.
Yeah, apparently they're like covered in like slime, like fish are or something. Ugh.
Well, Kirk's usually covered in slime. It's just usually not his own.
McCoy keeps a big tank of it in the other room.
So McCoy figures out that they've been mutated by injection. Multiple injections. Lots of needles.
It's a hormone. It's not even like a virus. It's a hormone that does this. Okay.
I mean, there is some, you know, medical science behind that concept.
Yes, hormones can turn you into a fish.
If they're fish hormones, I guess,
Excellent. Yes.
Sure.
Maybe not, you know, like scales and lungs, but, you know, fishy. Yes.
So Spock's all like, well, there could be intelligent life deeper underwater.
Maybe they did that to us.
Yeah, those dicks we don't know about. Such a weird episode.
Well, somebody did it. They had to be intelligent if they used, you know, needles.
I like how Kirk starts whining about, I can't command a ship from inside of an aquarium. You've got to save me. I can't live in here.
His chair's not waterproof.
It's like, every time I poop, it's just going to float around.
Damn it, Scott. Told you I don't need more intro quotes from you.
Okay, so how are we going to find these fish people?
And they're going to have to make sure McCoy remembers to change the water every so often.
Yeah, it's got to change the filter. It's got to put some snails in there. Well, here's a little castle for you, Captain. How do you like that? Fuck you, Bone.
Put a mermaid in there to keep you company.
Here's a little treasure chest that opens up periodically with an air bubble.
Fascinating.
Spock just stares at it for hours.
Okay, so how are we going to find these fish people?
Well, our shuttle can't make it down that far, and we don't have much underwater equipment.
Can't make it down that far because they blew up our pontoon boat with their snake thing.
Yeah.
Our sensors don't work because they didn't detect them the first time around. If only we had some kind of aquatic people that go and explore on their own. So, smash cut to Kirk and Spock diving into the water.
With an animation that we will see about 50 more times this episode.
Yeah.
An animation of them being completely uncolored.
Yes.
I mean, when the show has a precedent for, you know, black silhouettes of the characters when nobody wants to bother, like, detailing them in, it's a wonder they didn't just do that again.
Oh, my God. I have to say the production value of this particular episode is so terrible. They reuse the same scene, like, six times. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's about as Filmation gets.
It is just...
It's probably because of all the new animation they had to do for the pontoon boat.
Probably, yeah. Alright, so...
Like, I mean, they didn't have anything they could trace for that.
Ouch. So it's like 2 seconds later, like, there's this underground, you know, there could be intelligent life on this planet. 2 seconds later, oh look, intelligent life.
Mer people. They found Merlocks.
Merkins.
These guys look like they've been awesome He-Man toys. Look at the colors.
They're not muscular enough.
Yeah, I know, but like...
Otherwise, they would
no
be
breast skirt either. No breast pants.
Yeah, grass pants. So they all...
Basically the fish people are like, surface dwellers, gross, go away. Kirk's like, we come in peace.
Shoot to kill.
And the more people run away. Straight back to their home, leading Kirk and Spock straight to it.
Fish aren't
Good job,
very smart.
People. You're stupid.
Fish aren't very smart.
Oh, look, a castle.
Hi, Aquaman.
Oh, look, a castle.
So Kirk's like, I wonder why they don't want to talk to us. Spock says, they probably think you're ugly.
Yes.
Well, I think they're ugly too, except for that lady one.
Right. That one's clearly female.
So they finally go. They head down into the ocean's crevice, or crevasse, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They plunge into
they find
deep crack.
Society. Yeah. They find the Seaman Society. They quickly get thrown in a net and taken to the sea arena, I guess?
You know, honestly, this is just basically one big advertisement for those sea monkeys in the back of comic books back in the 70s. Because look at these guys. These guys are straight out of the little sea monkey advertisement.
Yeah. They are very Brian Shrimpish.
Yes. Back.
Okay,
back.
So they meet the elders. And basically boils down to the elders go by the old ways and fuck all the outsiders forever. Air breathers suck. The kids, however, were like, well, maybe they don't. We haven't really met any. Let's find out. So the youngins save Kirk and Spock by horribly mutating them to fish people.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then throwing them back on the surface, because that makes sense.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I can kind of see where they were going. They want to make a society in turmoil and the young versus the old, and they have the hell, what do they call them? The rules they follow? Whatever.
The rules of acquisition?
Commandments.
Yeah, like the commandments they had. They call them something specific, though. I can't remember what they were.
Ordainments?
Yeah, the ordainments. We must wear big purple belts at all times.
So, let's see. Kirk and Spock say, oh, we're aliens. We're not your surface dwellers at all. We come from space. And the fish people are like, bullshit. There's no such thing as space. There's just water and then there's air.
Yeah.
Space is a lot like air. There's just no air.
Yeah, do you see any telescopes around here, dumbass? We don't believe in space. Hell, we haven't even mastered the art of colorizing.
So Kirk's like, okay, look, we just want to get changed back to the way we were. Can you do that? And their answer is, no. It's forbidden. And it doesn't exist. And we're not going to help you.
Right.
Ever.
And in fact, we're going to tie you up and throw you back on the surface to die.
Reminds me of that Far Side cartoon where it's like, you know, one guy is sinking down in the deep with concrete shoes, another one like a fish is being floated up to the surface by a balloon.
Isn't that every Far Side cartoon?
I think that is every one. I think it was the same joke for like 15 years.
Yeah. But it was okay because you only got one per week. So by the time the next one came out, you forgot the last one.
Right. Yeah, there's something they're proof that from space is, look at our shuttle. It has the same name as our spaceship. See, that proves that there's a spaceship because there's a name on the side of our boat. What? The fuck are you talking about?
Obviously, that's not a word that would naturally exist on this planet.
Yeah, just...
Well, once they see the name of the spaceship inside their boat, when they go up in their own spaceship to see the Enterprise up there, they'll see they're from the Enterprise.
Oh, right, yeah, not some other spaceship that didn't exist. Oh, my God. Oh, fuck, this is just so stupid.
I like to imagine that when this civilization achieves spaceflight, they would just be flying around big fish bowls. Fully transparent and everything.
Right.
So, a castle
right,
in there.
So, eventually, Scotty comes down to visit, and he wears a force field belt, which just raises the question of why didn't they all just use their force field belts to go explore the ocean?
Right.
I don't think they were planning to go diving in the first place.
Because on a planet that's totally covered in water, still only the surface matters, right?
Good use of the environmental belts, though.
Good use on how to draw a space.
Anyway, so... The young mer lady comes and she's talking with Spock and Kirk and Scotty.
Spork.
And she's like, yeah, look, we used to do these things to escape the surface when the ship went bad. And after time, these mutations we did voluntarily became hereditary. Okay.
Which I can see that. I mean, you genomically change somebody so their offspring carry those genes forward.
It's
it makes
almost
sense.
Like mutation. It's almost like the changes to the genes affected the offspring that were made from those genes.
Yeah. As far as like the overall plot goes, I think it's kind of cool. So there's a planet. They know they're going to like be covered in water, so they start genetically tempering themselves to survive, and then they forget the old ways. It's kind of a neat, like, story build.
The genetic tampering affected. Yeah, that's what it means. Of course it affects. Of course it's hereditary.
No, it's like a temporary tattoos. You know, it's like temporary genetic modification.
Maybe all the gene therapy they did was recessive, and it took a while before, you know, the right combinations came together and made mutated kids.
Well, yeah, after it makes their women look like that, I mean, imagine breeding would slow down a bit. I'm sorry, honey, you just smell like fish.
The ladies just dump their clutches of Ed.
Yeah.
And the males walk along and fertilize.
Yeah.
That's the only reason Kurt didn't bang this mer woman.
But it doesn't mean he didn't father a ton of children.
That's true. I got bored.
A cloud of Kirk settled over the eggs.
So apparently there's like the ancient civilization is like hidden between these rocks that they have to go to.
So
to
now
find
I'm imagining like, well, Kirk faced tadpoles.
No, just like imagine. No, Mickey. The Dreamcast game Seaman, it's that, but with Kirk's face.
Oh,
Nemo narrates it still.
So this week's night is brought to you by Co-Watch.
I think I've killed Fort Max.
Thank you, you broker.
Siri, I would. My own cosmic duck gets on this.
Cosmic duck. Let's have a moment of silence for Fort Max.
The cosmic duck, you get extra bonus points if she turns it into like an edited video with like Shatner dialogue over it.
I like the way you handled that controller. It's been 27 days since we've talked.
Leave me alone.
Right?
God, Seaman was weird.
Yeah.
All right, where were we before we got distracted? All right, we found the fishbowl city that's been flooded. And they're going to capture the sea snake thing and milk its teeth. For the antidote.
Well, and it was that apparently, though, this city had sunk under the water in a few seconds.
Right, so everything was kind of preserved. So they go in, they find, like, the medical research center, and they find all this symbology of, like, a caduceus, you know, with the snakes wrapped around the pole. And Spock's like, oh, well, this is an ancient medical symbol, so this is clearly what we're looking for. It's like, wait, that's on Earth. That's like Earth stuff. That's not like a universe.
That just raises further questions.
Right. That doesn't make any sense.
And how does he know it's not like it's for specific? It's fine, and that could mean anything. It could be the thing they're looking for, or it could be, I don't know, it's just a expository.
Right.
We don't know that the thing they're looking for isn't a suppository.
All the goodness.
We keep dancing around the Futurama Atlanta jokes all night long, don't we?
Pretty much. The lost city of Atlanta.
All right, so they milk the snake's fang and get their antidote to mutation.
We're skipping over a kind of vital part of this, which is that the Enterprise has detected there's going to be another massive sea quake which will destroy everything. In about 4 hours. So basically the whole search for the lost city, find the antidote, process the information, make the retrovirus or whatever, has to take place within 4 hours.
Yeah, talk about an artificial drama, you know.
Yeah, as if finding the cure wasn't dramatic enough.
Right, that had to put a time limit and invent a time
and
limit for it.
And planetary destruction. It's like Michael Bay is doing this shit.
Yeah.
And then the stink explodes! Anyway, so... They get the snake's milk, and they just inject it all up into Captain Kirk, and McCoy blathers on about how if it's too strong, it'll make the mutation worse.
And permanent.
Right.
Which doesn't make a great deal of sense.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
So McCoy he's basically just eyeballing it.
Yeah.
He really is. He admits it, too. It's like, well, I lowered it by 3/4. Let's just try and see what happens.
Like, well, it didn't quite do it. Let me just ump it up to the max. Let's put it on 11 and see what happens. Right. Kirk gets all scaly.
Well, he changes colors like 4 times. It's fucking hilarious.
That's all the coloring budget went to, is coloring Kirk 4 times.
Though I will say, they pointed it out because because if they hadn't, I definitely would have wondered if it was going to be another... like Spock's weird coloring in half of that one episode. Oh, yeah. Where he's just kind of yellow for some reason.
Oh, I thought it was blue, wasn't he?
Yeah. Somebody was blue.
What's it? I thought it was the Klingons that were blue.
I thought the Klingons were purple.
This is a technicolored nightmare.
Either way. Anyway. It works.
Then he gets all scaly and has the fin burst out of his back. And somehow his clothes are still fine.
Yeah, he still looks like Zoidberg during mating season for a second. And then he's okay. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked. And then they save Spock. And then we're going to save the planet now, too. So, Scotty, save the planet.
All right, Captain. The only way I know how.
Now, this is probably the thing that makes the least amount of sense because by firing the phasers somewhere, they make the epicenter move, but the entire reason that the epicenter's the epicenter is that's where stuff wasn't moving.
Oh,
until
Fort
it does.
Fort Max, clearly in the future we'll be able to move an earthquake using weapons. I don't know part of the
show. Yeah, you gotta release the pressure in different areas.
Mm-hmm. It's like planet acupuncture.
Yeah.
Not
to be confused with planet Africa.
That's not our fault's work.
That's not our fault, Fort Max.
Clearly it is.
Yeah! I should have seen that coming.
It's okay, though, because they brought 2 of the Mer people up into space, put fishbowls in their heads so they could watch from the stars.
Yes. No, the whole time the crew was laughing at them for wearing fishbowls. Look. They did it. We made them do it.
So, probably the Enterprise is fooling around with phasers.
It's probably the same fishbowls that they had Kirk and Spock wearing earlier.
Yeah, they didn't wash them either. So that's how she gets pregnant with Kirk's offspring.
All right, so apparently mucking around the planet with phasers caused the lost city of Atlantis to come back to the surface somehow.
Right.
And the kids are like, okay, cool. Well, we're going to become surface dwellers now.
We're going to rebuild the ruins.
And we're going to leave the old fuckers downstairs in the water.
To die.
Yeah, to eventually die out.
And
that's a weird episode.
And we will make a new whatever it was to make sure you call us every weekend.
Yeah.
What, they lift him like a transponder or something? I didn't even see that part.
No, the old ones are going to make a law that the kids have to call home every weekend. So they don't
I see. God, what a weird episode.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, weird in concept. I mean, some of the concepts were kind of neat, kind of sci-fi. You know, a species just changes and forgets its past and reclaims its past glory. I mean, oh, that's kind of cool. I give it
that. As with a lot of...
This is a episode that really would have benefited from the longer run time of every other series.
Yeah, I think so. And better writing.
This is the classic animated trouble of, like, we got this idea for a script that we never really got to do in the original series. How can we simplify it down quick enough to get to 22 minutes and make it cheap enough to be animated?
Right.
Quality is not an issue here, folks. Just get it done.
Yeah.
And then the original writer's like somewhere crying, they're butchering my work.
Well, it was the early 70s. There were plenty of chemicals to help them forget.
And plus, it's entirely possible that, considering that some of the original writers were on this series.
If it was the original staff doing it, then yeah. All the drugs were probably Roddenberry at this point. And Roddenberry was in all of their wives.
Oh my God, what?
I don't know, probably.
Probably. I think it was just...
He slept around a lot.
Well, in the future, you know, there's no marriage or anything because it's a free love society.
Really, if anything, Kirk really is... Roddenberry self-insert fan character.
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
And he's handsome, and he can do flying drop kicks, and...
And he gets all the girls.
Yeah, he gets all the girls. I mean, in fairness, like I said, he got Majel Barrett, so he was already doing all right for himself. Come on.
It's reported that he got everybody, every female guest star that was on the show.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty widely reported that Roddenberry was kind of a slut.
That is awesome. I'm okay with this. That doesn't bother me in the slightest.
I think, you know, that was part of Roddenberry's vision of utopia.
Yeah. I think that's most, you know, cisgender male straight men's version of utopia. Having sex with every attractive female around you. Yeah, that pretty much covers it.
That sounds like hell.
Wait, no, he didn't marry them.
I can't
imagine
anything worse.
Well, I said cisgendered straight male, so, you know.
All I'm saying is your ideas of pleasure disgust me.
You know what? Hey, you know what? As well they should.
It's okay. My ideas of pleasure disgust me, too.
Yeah, that's why I closed like 17 browsers afterwards. So are we gonna do
Yes,
and how many of those are in super private mode?
It's the private mode where you actually set your computer on fire when you're done using it and buy a new one.
Right. I take out the hard drive and then dunk it in a bucket of water I keep next to my desk.
No, either that or it's the mode where not even you remember the history.
It sprays like this chloroform out of the monitor.
No, just the Men in Black flasher thing just pops out of the tower.
Your computer tattoos your history on your arm so you remember when you wake up.
Memento.
Wake up. Why am I covered with all these tally marks?
Hey, Mr. Tallyman, come tally me banana.
Intro quote?
Daylight, come on.
8 foot.
8 foot, 7 foot. 8 foot, punch. All right. Great, now I want to watch Beetlejuice. Thanks, guys. All right, so who's going to drive the slaver weapon?
Well, I think you just volunteered, Scott.
Good, because this one's
fun.
Yes, I'm going to do my best. I appreciate Mickey's effort in this last one because I don't think anybody could have made that snappy or interesting, because you certainly didn't. So I'm going
to
do my best with this.
I tried to skip through it as quickly as possible.
You really
and it still
did.
Took us half an hour for a 21-minute episode.
Well, I was slowed down by you turds.
Well, it's true. We were cracking jokes and talking instead of just sitting silently watching the episode.
That'd be the best podcast.
I know. It's like polite noises. You know,
so, yes.
The crunching of popcorn.
So this week on that one episode of Known Space.
Yeah, I noticed when I started the episode, the little, you know, the writer credit and then adapted from whatever it was. And like, huh, I should go look that up. See what the original story was about.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as I'm watching the episode, it's like, oh, this is actually just that story with the names changed.
Yep.
Yeah. And only main character names. Basically everything else was, you know, straight up from that original story.
Yeah, written by Larry Niven.
I don't know this.
Okay, I do. And what blows my mind about this is the Kzinti, the cat people, they were in, like, Wing Commander. They were in a bunch of other Larry Niven stories, Ringworld, and all his, like, space opera type stuff he wrote. So these are, like, these weird characters that exist in multiple universes, including, apparently, Star Trek as canon. I mean, TAS is canon, right?
Yep,
arguably.
Arguably.
It's more canon than the novels.
True,
but in like 88, Roddenberry said that he wanted it to not be canon except for certain parts.
Yeah.
But then they've relaxed on that again, so it's sort of...
Right, so...
Star Wars rule of canon.
Yeah, until
TV
it's contradicted.
TV is canon.
Sure, I can accept that. So I'd like to point out the Kzinti are not related to the Kaitan, or the Kaitan, or however you pronounce it, whatever Mares is, or will be.
I mean, there's different breeds of cats, Scott. Don't be a racist.
Or whatever they're called.
Yeah, the Pharisons are like the Klingon versions of the Kaitans, and they're actually supposed to be exactly the Kzinti in Star Trek Online, but they couldn't use the name, so they call them Pharisons. So the Pharisons are literally the Kzinti. Very strange.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yes. Well, I did all kind of research after I watched these episodes because it just blew my fucking mind.
Okay, so this one story, what is it from that you'll all seem to know?
Well, this one story is from his short story, The Soft Weapon, which is, you know, written in like 68 or some shit like
67,
that.
67, I think, yeah.
Yeah,
and
somewhere around.
Of course, also the Slavers are also from various... works as well.
Oh, that's right. So that's the other thing about this. It set some serious world building for the Star Trek canon universe, if you follow it, which is a billion years ago, there was a galactic civilization run by slavers that enslaved every other race, and there was a rebellion. Everyone died. Like, literally every intelligent species in the universe and the galaxy died, and evolution had to re-evolve intelligent life all over again, and which is how we
plot to Mass Effect.
It may be. I think Mass Effect may have gotten it from Larry Niven.
I'm pretty sure Mass Effect came first.
Anybody listening?
The PS3 came out in like 1940, right?
It feels like it. So, if there are any listeners, do some research and get back to us on that. Thanks.
I should really get a PS3 at some point. Finally.
Yeah, so that you can play the Kamen Rider Butt Red War games.
And watch Blu-rays.
But not...
You don't have a Blu-ray player on your computer?
No.
Huh.
I mean, I probably could have got one when I got my upgraded computer recently, but, like, it was kind of a time crunch and didn't really have time to do, you know, special shopping around.
Well, you could just, like... buy an external one and plug it in.
That's how I bought my house, you know. You see how all that paid out for me.
Yeah, aren't you still upside down on that?
I guess. Maybe. I try not to look.
And the answer is to not think about it. All right, so we're going to watch a very strange episode.
Someday we will.
Well, it's playing now. So they're back on the Aqua Shuttle, which is now in space.
Let's see it. Now, the Slavers, I believe, let's see, it was, I have no idea how it's pronounced, but it's the Slavers themselves, the Rinton,
or
something.
But, yeah. All right, so we start off in a really, like, swag-looking angular space shuttlecraft. So, now this is another interesting episode, because there's no Kirk. No Kirk in this episode. It's Sulu,
or
Uhura, and Spock. Yeah, or Enterprise. So they have a stasis box, which are like the most remarkable things in the galaxy because they contain these time-locked artifacts from the time of the slavers a billion years ago. And if you open them up, it could be anything.
But you gotta buy a master key first.
Right, and they're $1.25 each, but you can get Lobi crystals out of them sometimes.
And so, and other times,
you get pewter-colored little Transformer figurines.
And occasionally grenades with the pin pulled.
Yes, which I think is awesome. A disruptor grenade. Some slaver asshole took this thing off, put a grenade in there, pulled the pin and closed it and said, well, in a billion years...
I mean, I just like asshole. I just like the like little hint at the cultural significance of these boxes that they were probably so common at that point somebody could just be like, you know what? Let's just see how long it takes for this to fuck somebody over. I got like 20 more of these things in back.
And all this was done like about 15 minutes before their civilization fell. So they did it like in the other room, like their buddy opened up and like, hey, what's in here? Boom! And they all laughed. Shit, let's do it again. And then their civilization fell and they all got lost to time. So apparently the thing about these boxes is that the only way to find a slaver box is if you already have one and it kind of gives you a beacon to find other ones. To which Sulu at some point in the episode goes, well, how did they find the first one? You know, and apparently it was just dumb luck. So now everyone's after these boxes to find more of them because sometimes there's weapons inside, sometimes there's technology.
Where are those black helicopters coming from?
Not me.
I hear them too this time.
Really? You guys can hear that? What? It was a really slow fart. Okay, that's not true. That was a helicopter. So they're flying toward a third grader's finger painting of what it thinks a galaxy looks like.
Yeah, you know, I saw that. I'm like, Sulu, did you take a wrong turn?
Yeah, why are we above the galactic ecliptic? Why are we looking down at the galaxy, Sulu? So they're passing by some planet.
Throughout all the animated series, I love the look they've animated. And here, just sort of like looks straight at the camera and squints her eyes like, you motherfucker.
I love that.
Yes. They had to make at least two new drawings for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, animated series Uhura is great for just how much shit she is not taking.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Any episode is better with Uhura. Like, if she's the star of it, it's going to be pretty awesome.
She's been on the ship for like 3 or 4 years now, and she is just sick to death of all these people.
Oh, yes. Wouldn't you be?
It's a great bridge, though, from original series Uhura to movies Uhura.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So they're passing by some planet and the box begins to glow and they're like, oh, there must be another stasis box in the planet we're passing by. Well, hell, we have to go check it out.
And we gotta get there before Megatron finds it.
So they do even more expositions. Like, yes, it's old. It contains stuff. It's the only remnant from lost civilization. They pass by a science fair solar system. Some kid did with styrofoam spheres.
Complete with the orbits.
Yes. What the fuck? You're not supposed to see them. they're not actually there, you know.
But that is a weird part of this episode where Spock is basically narrating a lot of it.
Yeah.
Outside of what feels like the context of a log entry.
Right. So they land down in this completely ice-covered planet, which seemingly has no atmosphere. So they open up the back doors, and they're all wearing their environmental belts.
And Spock's got the box. Chimes in with, I've always hated these cold worlds.
Yes.
Can't do a fan dance or anything on them.
So, yeah, they get in there and start looking around. Spock's got this tricorder out trying to find that stasis box, even though he already just said the only way to find a stasis box is with another one. But he's got his tricorder out for some reason. So here's something neat. You know, so like, oh, it's 30 meters below us. So Sulu's like, oh, well, there's such low pressure here. Any amount of heat will vaporize this ice immediately, which I thought was a neat little actual scientific thing. That was kind of a little actual science in here.
Sadly, we didn't get to see it demonstrated, though.
No, because by this time,
speaking of actual science, cat people,
like bat ears, finned ears. Oh my god! And the most beautiful pink and purple suits I've ever seen.
I mean, those suits are pretty rad.
Oh, they are so rad.
You know, I'm pretty certain this is the race of people that Brack comes from.
Rest in peace, by the way.
Hi, Spock!
Don't touch me! Don't touch me! So now the Kzinti, which is apparently what the fuck these cat people are, now have the box on their little pink-purple spaceship thing that has, like, little marital aid spheres on the sides?
It looks like Frieza's spaceship.
Kakarot! Right.
That sounded more like Krillin.
Oh, sorry. Alright. So, they've been captured. The trio have been captured. Now they're standing on a police web. So apparently that's some sort of containment field thing.
SWAT spiders.
Yeah. So now the Kzinti had the box. And then make a point, said the Kzinti aren't supposed to have any weapons at all. Interstellar law prevents them from having any weapons because they're such dicks.
Except on police ships.
Right.
And I like when the commander comes in and just exposits, this is a stolen police ship.
that is pretty funny writing, though, because he's doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
Which they
this is a stolen police ship. If we are defeated, the revenge will disavow us. However, if we win, well...
we'll eat you.
Yeah. And then Spock gives more exposition. So this one cat comes in. This one Kzinti. I swear to God.
Oh, wait. Have we gotten to the point where he gives her special instructions yet?
Yes. Yes.
No, have we get to that yet?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I don't think so.
It's right around here.
He says such and such and such. He's a telepath.
I'll get to
it. Know that.
So Grumpy Cat comes in.
Grumpy Cat is an Esper.
Yes, he can read minds. And they're unhappy neurotics. And Uhura's like, yeah, he fits the description. Ooh, catty.
No. Those are the other ones.
So yeah, this is where Spock goes, oh, they'll only talk to you, Sulu. I'm considered an inferior species, and so is Uhura, because I'm a Vulcan, so I'm vegetarian, and I don't eat meat, so they don't even consider me a threat. She's female. Their society is they've bred their females to be little more than animals, which is like, holy shit.
So this kind of brought out one generation of breeding to do that?
Oh,
you don't have to deal with any women in your life, do you?
No, I don't.
God damn it. So it's so funny because Spock is like, so if they start trying to read your mind, think about eating raw vegetables. That'll gross them out and make them not want to read your mind. Sulu's like, okay.
Uhura, don't talk. Don't do anything. Don't look at them. Make them think you're an idiot.
Right. So funny. She's like, excuse me.
Excuse me.
And then Spock's like, no. I know you're intelligent, but just in case.
Are you forgetting?
I feel like how Spock sort of saves. It's like, look, this could be an advantage later on. Pretend you're stupid. I know you're not. I know you're not.
Right.
In case we can use it to save our lives. Got it? Okay.
Right. So Uhura does play along because she isn't an id, so she plays along very well. So Sulu kind of takes over and starts talking to these cat people, which I have to say the detailing on their faces and the way they animate them is actually pretty cool. And I do love the DreamWorks smirk face that one cat has. You know, one eyebrow's like down, the other one's up.
Maybe he's just drunk.
Yeah, it could be, because he's kind of a dick this entire time.
They all are.
They're cats.
So it's like, yeah, I'm going to knock over this glass off this table. There's nothing you can do about it. So, yes, we have one box.
I'm going to crash into your stationary leg and act like it's your fault.
I'm going to go shit in a box. So he starts making these allusions to eating them and stuff, but first he wants to open up the box and see what's in there. So now that he has two of them. Blah, 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 blah.
Paltrow's head.
What's in the box? So yeah, like Sulu's like, you're actually working for the government, and the Kzinti again goes, the records will show that the Traitor's Claw is a stolen vehicle. That's so funny because I keep saying it over and over again. Kzinti are so stupid.
So what is in the box?
Yeah.
Well, one of them had nothing, but this one has a child's drawing of the slavers.
Are they assumed as the slavers?
Suitable for autographs.
And it actually, though, that actually is what the slavers look like.
Is it?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
It fits the description of the Therentun from the various books.
Okay, yeah, it is this 8x11
glossy. It is a child drawing of a slaver.
All right. So the slavers, for our viewers at home, it's perfectly green. It has a yellow singular eye in the middle of its head. It looks like a Gorn mixed with Mother Brain from Super Metroid.
It's like a Gorn Gatu.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
That works.
Yeah. Okay. That's much better.
Very good, Mickey.
But yes, yeah. Let's see.
10 points
from
for Gryffindor.
From the Wikipedia Node Space page, it says Therentun, the slavers were approximately were about 1.25 meters tall.
Oh, that's a real measurement.
Yeah.
That'd be
125 centimeters.
How many figure arts high is that?
What, like 10?
Like what? 2.5 Fort Maxes.
So, for reference, a normal human is about a meter and a half. So these things were like Ferengi sized. So the other thing in the box, besides this child's drawing of a slaver, is a chunk of raw meat that is
okay.
Fresh. Yes, because why not?
Look, if I had a stasis box that would perfectly preserve anything for any length of time, damn right I'm going to put my groceries in there.
Yes.
But you put a pizza in there.
No, I want the pizza to age.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, Scott probably never heard about the 5-year-old pizza, did he?
That doesn't sound legal.
Similarly, you've not heard about how Scott sucks at making pizza.
Oh?
Is it as bad as your dad is at...
making hamburgers?
Or making steak?
No, it was hamburgers. It wasn't the steak.
So apparently with frozen pizzas, there's a reason they tell you to preheat the oven. You don't just put the frozen one in there and let it gradually warm up. So anyway, so the lead Kzinti pulls out this green Tic Tac with a handle on it.
It's their industrial strength hair dryer, and they
yes.
can't live without it.
The industrial strength scale dryer.
Ew.
So the because Kzinti... remember, the slavers are green reptilian scaly skin, so I know hair.
Well, they used to have hair, but they had really bad psoriasis.
Right. That's why they're so angry and enslaved the galaxy.
Not particularly. They're highly telepathic, but not particularly intelligent.
Now, how'd they take over the galaxy?
Normally, what you hear like telepathically is duh.
Mind control. They don't need to be all that smart to take over the galaxy if you can just control everyone.
What frat boys use alcohol for. So, yes, they pull out this little green hair dryer, all these different settings, and they're like, now we can rule the galaxy. And in the midst of being...
device is obviously a weapon.
Well, of course it is, because it has a handle. And anything, yeah, I can beat the shit out of anybody if it has a handle. You know, I can just hit
That's
you
true.
With it. Yeah, see? It's a melee weapon.
And you don't, and it doesn't even need to have a handle. You can make a handle.
Right.
Or you can just slam a handle on it like Dinobot.
So one thing I like about this episode, too, is that any British people watching this are like, the captain doesn't seem that happy, even though he's called Chuffed Captain. And chuffed is like British slang for happy and pleased. I'm just chuffed to bits. So I think it's fucking hilarious that I'm chuffed captain.
Nope.
He's sounding kind of like your Dr. McCoy.
I've got like two voices, and both of them are stupid.
So, what wonderful action features and play settings does this toy have?
Oh my god! Well, but first, while he's talking to the psychic cat, his pupils dilate and he looks like a cat meme. His eyes get all big. All right, so they take it out of the planet surface. They throw the police web down, and they get the trio into it. And for some reason, the Gazinti, oh, I guess he must have stolen one of the characters' phaser type 2s, because he's got a type 2 phaser.
No, pistol. No, they said earlier in the episode they had phasers when they weren't supposed to, so.
Oh, that's right.
These are their own bootlegs.
I see. That's why they're all one color.
All the wrong color.
Yes, like burnt red. That's weird. So the meat that was
it's
inside
Char's
the box.
Custom phaser. Fires three times faster.
So the meat was protoplasmic and poisonous. So I'm glad they tested it before eating it.
We don't know how they tested it, Scott.
Oh, I don't know either, but I'm just
we're gonna need another Timmy.
I assume they cut a piece off of it and fed it to one of the lower crew members. Here, look. Meat.
So one of the neat things is So one of the things he changes something on the item and it changes shape, and so he points it at the trio, clicks the button, and nothing happens. So the telepathic one is the one kind of giving the exposition here, who seems to know what's going on because he can kind of tell what's going on in the head of Sulu. So it's like, oh well, he's not feeling any discomfort. He's just kind of standing there. Oh, okay, great, thanks.
And at some point, he's like, can I stop reading him now? He's making me experience the taste of yellow vegetables.
Right. He's imagining eating, like, a yellow... Yeah.
Sulu was thinking of eating squash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only Sulu had thought to, you know, imagine eating okra, he probably could have made the whole crew retreat.
So he clicks the button again, and he points it back at Sulu. Just suck it down? Is that what that noise was? So it changes the button. It changes to a cylinder. He points it at Sulu, and it's just like a little hand telescope. Whoop-de-shit. Wow. It turns it into a fucking spyglass. We already have small telescopes. Yeah, really? You fucking think? Oh, Jesus.
This is the dumbest alien invention.
And the aliens...
It's kind of hilarious, though.
Oh, the Gazinti are so stupid. So they turn to something else, and it shoots to the ground, and it's a laser. It's a laser. It hits the ice and doesn't even do anything.
You can see Spock trying to fight the urge to laugh.
Right. Because Sulu just looks at it and goes,
laser, huh?
Yeah. Because even Sulu comments, I was like, we've had more advanced technology for over 100 years. Now the best scene in this entire fucking show. He sits another setting, aims it at the trio, pulls the trigger, and flames are shooting at the back of it towards his face. He goes, Wah! And starts spinning him around and flinging him all over the surface of the planet.
And this lasts for like a minute, too.
And he's sliding around on his ass. And then the distraction, Uhura says, fuck this, I'm cheesing it. And she begins to very quickly saunter away in her miniskirt.
In her one running animation, of course.
Her one animation.
Which is kind of more of a shuffle.
Yeah, it's kind of a... She looks a little bit too much like Shaggy. I'm sorry. She looks like Shaggy. So the chuffed captain, his suit gets ripped. We're like, oh crap, we gotta get him back in the ship before he dies.
No, it was Telepath whose suit gets ripped.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, yeah, it's Telepath. They need him, so they're gonna save him. So they realize that... Oh, wait, crap, we forgot. Human females are intelligent. She's actually going to get away. So they zap her with a phaser and stun her. I would like to point out this is stun number one to Uhura. If you go, XB, could you put like a counter in the bottom of the screen for me? Thank you.
Uhura is the Geordi of this episode.
Or the Krillin.
No, just remember that time Geordi got shot over and over again?
Oh, yeah.
By, Next Generation space retards.
By Dick, as played by Chris Leda.
And if no one can tell which way is Downs.
Oh my. Oh, that joke had a little extra something in it, and I think it was a chromosome. All right, so the fun part is to watch the Gazinti trying to figure out why this thing would shoot a rocket stream at the back of it. They're like, maybe it's a flamethrower. They're like, no, it's
maybe
clearly
it's maybe it's a rocket board.
Yeah, maybe you're supposed to stand on it. It's the size of a gun.
They're so stupid.
They're my new favorite Star Trek race.
They're not even a Star Trek race, though.
Oh, they are now.
Yeah.
It's canon.
It's canon, bitches.
Yes. So Uhura's like, how long was I out? I'm like, yeah, you didn't miss anything. We're just watching these retards try to figure out how to use this weapon. And they're laughing about it. They're prisoners on this icy planet without an atmosphere, and they're laughing at the Gazinti. And I like how Spock's
you
like,
be able not to?
I like how Spock is totally not concerned. He's like, look, there's nothing I've seen so far that we don't already have technology of, so what the fuck ever. I'm not even concerned. So the Gazinti, they hit something else, and it looks like an egg beater now. These two, like, tabs coming off the side. And they're like, well, that doesn't have a gun sight. There's no way to aim it, so this probably isn't a weapon.
And then they press a button, and it turns off all their stuff.
Yes. Except for the life support belts, thank goodness.
But that's not Gazinti technology.
It turns off, like, all the Gazinti technology for some reason.
That's the thing that was aimed backwards behind them to where their power generator was.
And the containment web is probably remote powered from their ship.
Yes, probably. So Spock's like, okay, well, they're distracted, run. That's
remember to zigzag.
Yeah, and zigzag, which is Uhura didn't do the first time.
So that's why Spock added that instruction.
Now, this is fucking awesome, though. Spock does a flying zero-G drop kick right to the lead Gazinti, right into his ribs. He grabs the green thing, the slaver weapon, and then cheeses it.
Yeah.
This is awesome. At this point in the episode, I was like, man, this is fucking great. And then Uhura gets zapped again. Okay, if we can take the counter to two. Okay, there it is. Okay, good. Thank you.
Uhura own count.
So there's this neat little quick scene of like Sulu's hiding behind one of the icy rocks. There's this big looming shadow, and then out from between the rocks it's Spock. It's like 3 seconds, but actually built a little suspense. That was kind of neat. So Spock has the slaver weapon. They have Uhura, so now they got to figure out what they're going to do. So Sulu's like, oh shit, they're going to call for help. What are we going to do? Spock's like, they're not going to call for help. So he was like, well, why not? It's like, because I just broke some of his ribs. He got attacked by a herbivore. He can't tell anybody about this out of embarrassment.
He can't do anything about this until he gets revenge. He can't tell anyone. He can't call for help until he gets revenge.
Yeah, until he kills me personally. Which I thought, that's actually kind of neat. Their species, that's something a Klingon should do, you know?
Exactly. They're Klingon cats. Knock it over all the Klingons' expensive glasses and stuff.
Yeah.
But all Klingon glasses are made of metal because Klingons.
Yes.
But yeah, they'll get all dented up and scratched up.
So as Sulu and Spock are hiding behind this icy outcropping, Sulu kind of starts piecing it together and goes, wait a minute, this isn't like some weapon of mass destruction. This seems like a tool for like a spy or an espionage agent because it can like dampen fields, has a telescope, it's got like a weak weapon. It doesn't really seem like
an emergency escape mechanism.
Yeah, it's got like an escape mechanism. Yeah, so you can get away quickly. So this seems more like a spy tool than like a soldier.
It's really a multi-use memory gadget.
Yeah. And I like Spock.
I would kind of like that because for once Spock doesn't save the day and have all the answers. It's
right.
One of the lesser crewmen.
Yes, and Spock acknowledges that Sulu is, well, as he calls him, an expert in weaponry, which is something that was touched on a little bit in the original series.
Right, right. Did Sulu fire the... Yeah, he normally fired the phasers on the ship, didn't he?
Yeah, but he, you know, he was also interested in fencing. He had an interest in, like, antique firearms, you know.
Right. Well, he is Asian, so he has no martial arts. So,
martial arts based around guns.
Right. So, that's a very valid point. Something I do like is Sulu was actually like, no, this makes more sense. Yeah, because Spock wouldn't have any fucking way of knowing.
But Spock knows everything.
most of the time.
Yeah.
Weird. Deus Ex Machina. So they have noticed, well, they've Deus done all the Machina. Setting. Yes. So they've done all the settings, and they're like, well, you know, that must be it, right? And Spock's like, no. There's one more. It's a null setting. It's not to a safety lock. It's just this unlabeled setting. It's not off. It's not locked. So what does it do? Let's present and find out. apparently, it turns into a paddleboard with a ball and a string on it.
Kendama mode.
Yeah. So the Gazinti get in their ship, floated over the surface, and are like, all right, guys, we have your woman. You have our weapon. Let's do this. You know the drill.
Oh, and send Spock along, too. He and I need to fight now.
Oh, and right. this is after the massive nuclear explosion.
No, not yet.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not?
No, not yet.
Spoilers.
Yeah, really.
Seriously, girl, jeez. Honestly. So, yeah, Sulu's talking to him, is like, I want to fight Spock single-handedly. And Sulu's like, nope, not going to happen. I was like, God damn it. I got two broken ribs. I haven't bandaged them. I have to kill him in this state or I can't go home.
Spock, what's your thoughts on this? He'll still win.
Yeah, he'll still kick my ass. Even though he's got two broken ribs over his heart, or one of his hearts.
Yes, but Spock explained that, you know, the ribs in the sensitive areas have vertical supports as well, so he's not really that bad off.
And Uhura takes this moment to make fun of him. He's like, nope, they don't think much of you because of that. So the sphere, the little paddle ball thing they have, Sulu twists it, touches it one more time. Now it turns into this really wicked-looking gun.
Sweet.
So they aims it, thank goodness, to the horizon, which blows the fuck up into a ginormous atomic explosion, which just ravages the surface of the planet.
I like that they have the knowledge, like, maybe we should duck beneath this blast wave.
Well, and the thing is, too, right. Like, the writing also had the knowledge of, okay, that's way far away, so the blast wave is not going to get there immediately, and Sulu and Spock have a moment to talk about what just happened first.
Right. And to figure out that this was not just like an atomic beam or anything, this was a total conversion beam. It turned every bit of matter into pure energy at the point of impact.
In a completely uncontrolled way.
Yes. Holy crap.
Yeah, it's not really an atomic explosion thing. It's just the mushroom cloud from the explosion being so fucking huge.
Right. Yeah, and they quickly realized that that is actually a dangerous weapon that the Gazinti shouldn't have. So
really?
Now the stakes have just been raised. Well, before, who cared about a laser or a telescope? It was like something you get out of a box of Cracker Jacks. Who gave a shit?
But they can see far off things. Some...
So it changes the little green device. The sliver weapon turns back into the little paddle ball.
Oh, and when the blast wave comes, despite, you know, getting down on the ground, Spock and Sulu get blown away and incapacitated and get captured again.
Yeah, so now they're back on the ship. Still back in the police web.
Stolen police web.
Yes, the stolen police ship, yes. Now the Gazinti are now, again, circled around the slaver weapon, which has turned into yet another form. This one with buttons and stuff on it.
Well, that's because they twisted it the opposite direction that Sulu did.
Right. They just tweaked it a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
But they do notice that the thing now in this current form is producing power.
It probably was producing power before if it was doing all those other things.
Yeah, well, they just now detected it.
They're kind of
turned into a plot device.
That's what that green thing is. It's a literal plot device.
Yes.
Spock notices it has a grid on it, so it might have a speaker system for communication. He says, but that seems redundant. So it begins beeping, and in the most irritating voice besides my own.
Or Oryx.
Oh, fuck that guy.
I just had to remind you of him. I
fucking hate Oryx. He knows what he did. So Spock goes, oh, wow, it can talk, and it's a reasoning computer. It's an AI in a device so small. That's amazing. Because, you know, in the future, computers are huge. So the Gazinti started trying to question, how long ago was it when you turned off? And it was like, oh, well, I don't know. I was off, idiot.
I like the...
I was off, and I was in a stasis box.
Right. How the hell would I know?
I don't think it was even aware it was in the stasis box because it was turned off.
Exactly. And it was in, and probably because it was in the stasis box.
And it was also turned off. Are we just going to do this all night?
I like the speech pattern they gave to this computer because it makes it just seem alien enough while you can still tell what it's saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it says, well, I'm not going to answer anything you say until you basically give me the password because I don't know who the hell you are. Like, you know, put in your Windows password and then I'll let you install some fonts or whatever.
User account control is turned on.
Yeah. No, you cannot change your background.
Shit, it's got 2-factor authentication.
Damn it, where's my cell phone?
Yeah. So they're like, we saw the matter conversion beam. We want that one. And it goes, okay, sure. Just turn me this way and I'll turn right to it. And they go, okay. And Sulu's like, oh shit, they got it.
Spock's like, nah, we got this.
So it turns into yet another form. It has like a double-headed recorder.
It looks like a Dr. Seuss musical instrument.
Yes, mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So everyone, there's
like
a few moments.
The Whoville orchestra would use.
When they have a Whoville execution, that's what they use. They splattered his Whovian guts all over the Whovian land. So I like that they hold it out and they're like, well, there's no sights or anything. So how do we aim it? It's like, well, maybe it's like a broad beam. Maybe you just aim it in the general direction. It kills whatever's there. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. They're like, oh, yeah, you need to shoot it far away, too, just in case it does what it did before. And they're like, oh, yeah, good idea. Stupidest
animals. But, yeah, you know, Uhura's kind of freaking out inside the ship.
Yeah, she's like, we can't let him have it. And Spock's like, that's fine. Like, what do you mean? Spock's like, well, think about it. If you're an intelligent machine and you're a weapon created for a specific race, you wake up held by some stranger who doesn't know the passwords. They want your most devastating
And they're asking you all kinds of questions.
Right. What are you going to assume? Oh, that I've been captured. Yes, and when they ask for your weapon, what are you going to do?
Kill them.
This is so awesome. Mm-hmm. I do love this episode. So they pull the trigger, and then boom! Crater!
It's a Wile E. Coyote moment.
It's a giant blue anus where they used to stand. Yeah. Also, half the Kzinti ship is just gone.
Oops!
So all the Kzinti are knocked out, so the Enterprise crew turns their belts back on. So Spock's like, yep. Yeah, that's what happens.
Let's go home.
And of but course, yes, the weapon seems to be gone.
Well, yeah, it blew up. But yeah, and let's see. The changes that were made is like the main character Jason Papaduru was changed to Sulu. Jason's wife was changed to Uhura. And Spock. Character was originally a manic depressive member of a pacifistic race of herbivores.
Sounds about right.
And one change in the plot is that the device was made by a species rebelling against the slavers.
Ah. Not made for the slavers. So the Enterprise crew get back on the wicked cool looking shuttlecraft. And Spock starts waxing poetic about, oh, it's strange how the past can affect the present. This weapon almost sparked a new war. And this, a billion years later, And Hur's just like staring at the back of his head going, just shut up.
Shut up.
Just shut the fuck up. Dude, just shut up.
I'm tired of going on away missions with you.
Yeah. I'm going to my quarters and I'm taking a bath and I'm forgetting all about this. So they say mention something how the Kzinti like had the superstition that like ancient weapons have the souls of their owners still in them or some crazy shit. I don't know.
And Hera's like, well, that tradition's not going to change anytime soon, those stupid fuckers.
Yeah. not a cat person, I take it.
Well, they shot her twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was it. So they sail into the void in their little shuttlecraft to somewhere, which we never find out.
Trying to remember where they parked the Enterprise.
Yeah. They're going to come back and, like, like transport back on. There's going to be these giggling girls running to the transporter, transporting out. Kirk's going to be chasing him into the room. Oh, you guys are back early. What the have you been doing? Why does it smell like funk in here? Scotty's passed out in the hallway.
What's so odd about that?
Knife in his hand.
Oh, no, not again.
I like to think that after Wolf in the Fold, like, Kirk and McCoy just, you know, sneak into Scotty's quarters while he's asleep and stick a knife in his hand and wait for him to wake up.
Note to self, buy a Scotty figure and toy knife.
Bonus points if it's old Scotty from the Next Generation line.
Oh, boy.
I almost bought an Edith Keeler figure yesterday.
Why didn't you?
Because it was $10 in store and it was $8 on Amazon. I figured, eh, whatever.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. So that was the slaver weapon.
That was a really good episode.
I liked it. It was weird. It was interesting. It was crazy.
It was silly.
It was silly in the best ways.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was entertaining. That's the important part.
Yes, it was enjoyable.
And it was the exact sort of thing that they couldn't have really done well in the original series.
What, done an episode without Kirk? Yep.
Yeah, huh? No, you're right.
That never would have flew.
Without Kirk or McCoy.
Or the ship.
Yeah. And no Scotty.
And then so, all the cat people would have been Julie Newmar.
I would have been okay with that.
Or Eartha Kitt.
Or both.
Oh, even better. Yes. Go on. But, yeah, that was very interesting. Very interesting. So, what's next?
Oh, well, Deep Space Nine is next because we're taking a little break from Next Generation because we had basically five weeks of it in a row, even though we only did four episodes based on it.
Sure, sure.
So we're doing The Assignment from, what was that, season 5?
Sure, why not?
The Assignment. What's that one about?
Wait, do we want to save that one more for closer to Halloween? Because it's kind of a creepy episode.
Eh.
It's where Keiko gets possessed.
Spoilers.
Oh, she's like, yeah, oh gosh. Now I don't need to watch it, thanks.
It's there in the Netflix description.
Actually, there's probably a better episode we could do for Halloween, which is a Next Generation episode.
Masks?
That's not what they had in mind. I was thinking the one where everybody's having the waking nightmares.
Oh, so they're being forced to watch Voyager.
Yeah. That's it exactly.
Okay.
They're being forced to be on a podcast.
Yeah, The Assignment is episode 5 of season 5 of Deep Space Nine.
So 5 of 5. Okay.
Of Deep Space 5.
Yeah.
Deep Space 5, the unnotable space station.
Right, yeah, that's where Admiral's careers go to die. Like I said, it's like Alpha Centauri. Yeah.
So this is the episode I was thinking of to do for Halloween, and I love the picture they have up in the info box.
Oh yeah, this one. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So the main picture they have is Guinan with some sort of rifle blasting a red beam at something with the most badass look in her face.
And the biggest grin.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the biggest hat. That literally is her biggest hat.
Which is impressive because she has a large collection of big hats.
Yeah, I don't know where she keeps all those.
I remember this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that, I watched Time Zero finally too. It also sucks.
I like the first part of Time Zero a lot. Part 2 is a distinct letdown compared to it, but that's the way a lot of these two-parters go.
Hey, Mickey is about 2 episodes away from going, you know what? Star Trek just fucking sucks.
No, I mean, two-parters, especially the season-ending cliffhangers, rarely live up to their part 1s.
I don't know. I'm happy to keep the nostalgia goggles that I have.
Well, see, you've got nostalgia for this stuff, but a lot of the, like the last half of Next Generation, I've probably only seen about 50% of it.
Really?
And that's, it's only not the 50% that you have.
Hmm.
Like, the episodes that everyone remembers from the last half of Next Generation, like, you know, Time's Arrow and Reunification and Chain of Command, I never watched those.
Really? That's a shame.
I watched the other half of the episodes.
Right. Yeah, that's a shame. Yes, yeah, especially if you see them at the time, in context, in the time period they're let out, they were really amazing. They just were.
So on the flip side, though, I've got nostalgia for the other half of the episodes that no one seems to remember.
Yeah, but you don't like them either. That's the problem.
He likes,
you're supposed
some
to like it.
I like a lot of later season episodes.
Unless it's season 7. Those are all terrible.
There was some good stuff in season 7, just not much.
Genesis.
Which one was Genesis? Is it the spider?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Spider Berkeley.
Oh, is that the one where they start, that the whole crew starts devolving?
Yes, I love that, just because it's so dumb.
Yeah. But it's just a fun episode, too, though.
Did they?
It is.
Did they go to Warp 10?
Sadly, not.
No.
No, technically, Fort Max, it's all Barkley's fault.
As usual.
Why? Was he stuck in the holodeck again?
No, he has bad genes. That made everybody else de-evolve.
Oh, okay.
I think we have to watch that episode. We have to do that episode. That sounds amazingly
bad.
It is good.
Well, Fort Max, like, go.
I've never seen it. Oh, shit. Yeah, that's like a must-watch episode.
Okay, good. Oh, well, maybe that'll be our next TNG one, right?
Wait, Mickey, you never watched Genesis?
No, I have, but Fort Max never has.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Genesis is great. Lower Decks is fucking amazing.
Lower Decks is a really good story that I'm surprised was not earlier in the series.
Yeah.
So we could really do either Genesis or Night Terrors for a Halloween episode. Because Genesis has that good creepy thing going on, too.
What about Phantasms?
Which one's Phantasms?
Well, Data's Nightmares.
I never really liked that episode.
Okay.
I'm not saying we can't do it, but it's not one I really have, like, much of anything.
I remember there was some weird, upsetting imagery in it, but I don't remember if the episode itself is good.
Oh, you're thinking of Troy is the Cake?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty upsetting.
Yeah, don't come around here no more.
Ooh, very good.
Yeah, I'm not saying we can't do that episode at some point. I just don't have much to say about it.
Well, that's typically a sign to not do this one.
Yeah, but it's not like I say that much about any given episode. Unless it's that one episode of Deep Space Nine with the sailboat. In which case, you can't get me to shut up about that episode. Because I'm just, like, really into that episode for some reason. Even Scott was complaining about how much I was talking that week.
You're all about boats.
Yeah, you just... Yeah.
Space Boats.
But yes,
Space Compass.
Space Sextant.
Space Sextant.
How does that even work? That doesn't work with artificial gravity, you idiots. But yes, next week we're doing the assignment from Deep Space Nine, which is also an entertaining episode.
Good.
And mildly creepy.
Good.
Well, it's like good it. Deep Space Nine.
It's another entry into O'Brien's life fucking sucks.
Of course it does.
And then when we're talking about that, I will present my own theory about the truth of the episode.
Oh.
But I want to save that for when we're actually talking about it.
Yeah, now we all have to wait a week for this?
Yes, and I mean, there's just a good chance I will forget this whole thing by the time we get back around to it.
Maybe we should put it in the show notes.
Especially if you use the double secure method on your browser.
No, my monitor's kind of old, doesn't have the neuralizer attachment.
Okay, that's good. if only I could forget some of the porn I've seen.
You'd forget it automatically.
Yeah. There's only so much capacity for that. I mean, it's several, you know, terabytes, but whatever.
Teraquads.
Yeah, kiloquads, teraquads, exaquads.
I was kind of pleased when watching Measure of a Man recently that the capacity of data's internal memory is actually still a fairly respectable amount of data.
It's all the data.
Yeah, I was about to say 100%.
It is one data.
Yes. Data physics is one data of data capacity.
It is precisely one data.
No, but I think what he states is in his internal storage capacity is works out to like 100,000 terabytes.
Oh, gosh. See, now I got to look this up because, I mean...
800 quadrillion bits is what he says, and I think it rounds up to 100,000 terabytes.
How does he cram all that RAM?
Up his ass.
Okay, here we go. Data's positronic brain. Data has 100,000 terabytes of memory.
Yeah.
Equivalent to 100,000.
That's what XV said.
Yeah.
Right. No, yeah, 100,000 terabytes.
That's a lot.
And processes 60 trillion computations per second.
But like 3/4 of it is taken up by operating system, though.
Yeah, let's not even get to about the partition. Yeah, it takes up a lot of that.
And there's all the bloatware that Soong installed.
Right.
And the cat food recipes.
And the other thing is, it's not flash memory, so it's just like a disk it has to read. So when he's thinking really hard, you hear it whirring. Click, 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 click.
His L2 cache is alarmingly small.
Oh, man. Is there anybody out there going to be nerdy enough to get these jokes? Oh, wait.
On a Star Trek podcast?
Yeah.
I think, Scott, the question you should be asking is anybody out there to get these jokes?
Yeah, well. Hi, XV's mom.